starring Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime, the fabulous stories of the immortal character originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with Zither music by Anton Karas. In my youth, after a serious study of all the good causes that can lay just claim to a man's attention, I decided to work for the best cause of all, the cause of Harry Lime. But though I subsequently spent my life performing pecuniary sleight-of-hand tricks, it cannot be said of me that I dealt in unattractive merchandise. Whenever I sold a gold brick, it was a highly polished article indeed. Perhaps you'd like to hear about one such commercial venture.
People who come here. Oh. You have told me that you would be able soon to find some solid commercial opportunity for a man of my genius. But the piece you have come up with.
I have merely been filling in the time until something really interesting comes along, Herr Kopp.
It will never come along,
but it has come along, Herr Kopp.
It has?
Today.
What is it?
It would take a great deal of capital.
I am Hans Kropp. There's no lack of capital.
Very well. Bill Foster registered here today.
So?
Bill Foster is an English representative of the United Nations.
So?
He's in charge of United Nations plans for the industrialization of Western Europe.
That is interesting.
I thought it might be Herr Kropp.
If I could get to a man like that.
If you could get to a man like that, if you could learn what plans the United Nations has, you could build a fortune greater than the one you had before the war, buying the right property, going into the right business in the right place.
You do not know to teach me the alphabet of commerce. This Foster, is he corruptible?
Oh, he's already corrupt.
Good. Can I trust him?
If you pay.
There will be no difficulty then.
Except that he will not trust you.
What do you mean?
He is cautious. He deals with people he knows.
Don't you know him?
Not that well.
Then your information is absolutely useless.
Not quite. I know someone who does know him.
Who?
Harry Lime.
And who is Harry Lime?
Surely you have seen him around this hotel. Tall, distinguished.
And Foster would do business with this Harry Lime?
Without hesitation, without question.
And how can I be sure that Harry Lime will not cheat me?
You can be sure of that. What you cannot be sure of, Herr Kopp, is that he will help you at all.
Why not?
For the same reason that he will not cheat you.
You have strange and disgusting acquaintances, Herr Mannheim.
Harry Lime is incorrupt.
Incorruptible? This incorruptible person is the only man in Bern who could act as a go-between with Foster.
That is correct.
Very well. We shall try to corrupt Harry Lime.
Herr Kropp was going to try to corrupt me. Being a highly moral man, I've always delighted in biting biters, sinning against sinners, and fleecing crooks. So I look forward to meeting Herr Kropp with a pleasure I was wise enough to conceal when the next day I allowed Curz and Herr Kropp to run into me in the lobby.
Hey, Mr. Hoffley. Mr. Ryan. Mr. Reif.
How are you, Mr. Reif?
Herr Mannheim, is it?
Yes, and I would like to present Herr Kopf.
How do you do, Mr. Reif?
How do you do?
Hans Kopf. You have heard of him, surely.
Oh, yes, I've heard of you, Herr Kopf. I've heard of the account of your trial. Sorry, your friend had to die.
My friend?
Yes, a chap named Adolf Hitler.
Oh, you are too harsh, Mr. Reif. I did only what any patriotic businessman under Hitler would have done.
That's probably true. I many times noticed that patriotism blunts the sense of smell.
Mr. Lang, perhaps you and Herr Kopf could find some ground for me to let
We try. Perhaps we can find something, but do we have to try?
Well, I was just suggesting...
You were just suggesting that since Herr Kropf and I are guests in the same hotel, we can at least be civil to each other, is that it?
Oh, I'm sure that is what your man I meant.
Well, that's the way it'll be. We can be civil to each other, Herr Kropf. We can smile, we can bow, but at a distance, please, because my flesh is sensitive to knives in the hands of those who slap me on the back. Okay? Now, Herr Kropf was sure that I was the incorruptible public official that my friend Kurt Mannheim had represented me to be. And if I continue to let him think so, it's only because of the point of honor I never tell the truth to liars. Later the same day, I listened once more from my station just at the turn of the veranda to a conversation between Kurt and Kropf.
This man Lyme is going to be difficult.
I told you how it would be.
There is no other way to get that foster?
No other way that I know of.
What are Lyme's weaknesses?
He has none.
Gambling?
Lyme?
How's he drink?
He holds it when he does.
Does he like books or plays, operas, symphonies?
Does he have a secret vice? Is there anything at all in his background that can help? Let me assure you, I know the techniques of breaking down a man. I have investigated carefully. I have found nothing.
You say he is a bachelor?
Yes.
Doesn't he get lonely?
Who knows?
Now, a woman would possibly be...
Difficult.
Why is
this man like ultra-respectable women?
Then an ultra-respectable woman could...
An ultra-respectable woman who will do your bidding?
It is difficult. I wonder...
Yes?
I wonder if Mr. Lyon would like my daughter.
Herr Kropf, should you use your own daughter on a job like this?
Oh, I would not let her know what I was about. I could not let her know. You know why?
Why?
Because she is like this man Lyme. Exactly like him. She is stuffy, she is proper, respectable, she is moral, she preaches.
Oh, she does sound like Lyme.
Yes, and if Lyme likes, I may be able to get around him. It will be a good joke on my daughter, eh, Kurt? She hates preachers at me all the time. Now she is going to help me.
Listening down at the land, I was appalled. I played my part all too well. Now I was to be wooed. Not in any of the ways I could have suggested myself to Herr Kropf, not with money or entertainment, or by having a lewd and lovely dancing girl smile seductively upon me. No, I was to be thrown into the company of an earnest, bookish, sniffing do-gooder with glasses, most likely, and acne. A joyless grab who would in all probability avoid the use of the complexion aid she would so sorely need. And I would have to act up to this gargoyle. Well, business was business. Kurt informed me that I had 2 days reprieve for Frieda, which was the preacher's name, would not arrive until Friday. I spent those 2 days in prayer, but by no means in fasting. And when Friday was all too soon upon us, I stationed myself in the lobby and waited to be accosted by Herr Kropf.
Mr. Lyme!
Ah, hello there, Kropf.
When my friend Mannheim introduced us the other day, Mr. Lyme, you were good enough to say that you felt we should be seated.
Yes, I did, at a distance.
I understand. I am presuming on you now, Mr. Lyme, asking you to understand that I am not the bachelor I'm supposed to be. Asking you at the least to be pleasant to my daughter. She has just come to stay here with me.
I'll be very happy to be pleasant to your daughter.
She is here. You would care to meet her?
Certainly.
Oh, Frieda! Frieda!
Yes, Papa?
Well, the girl who tripped toward us was not the girl I had been expecting. No glasses, no acne, no need of complexion aid. She was young and lithe, with corn blonde hair and rather serious blue eyes set in a face all peaches and cream. I'm afraid I staggered my way through the introductions.
Perhaps you two young people would like to go into the patio or go for a hike? Is that what you call it?
Papa, are you not presuming? Mr. Lyme may have other uses for his time.
Oh, no, not at all. I should be honored if you'd come with me into the patio, Fräulein Kropf.
Fine. I have some business to attend to. I will see you at dinner, Frieda.
I must apologize for Papa.
Oh, why?
He so obviously threw me at you.
Oh, I
don't know what to think. I'm very embarrassed.
If you're a sample of his throwing arm, he should be with the New York Yankees, honey.
You're very gallant.
I'm very much smitten.
I do not ordinarily approve of my father's friends.
Oh, fine, because I'm not a friend of his. The fact is, I don't approve of your father very much.
I don't blame you.
But we shouldn't let such things make any difference to us, should we? The patio?
By all means, Mr. Lyme.
In a moment, Orson Welles returns as Harry Lyme, the third man. In today's story, Turnabout is Foul Play.
Frieda and I danced and skied and dined and walked together every day and every evening. My father beamed whenever I called it a sweet for Frieda, made no attempt to approach me. He wanted to be quite certain that I was hooked before he started to reel me in, and as far as I was concerned, I didn't mind waiting for him to come to the point. Not when I was constantly in such lovely company. It was Frieda herself who finally brought things to a head. One night when we were sitting over coffee after dinner in the corner of the hotel lobby.
Harry?
Yes?
We haven't spoken much about my father.
Mm. No, we haven't.
I know you disapprove of him.
Well, I'm sorry, but I do.
It's all right. I do, too. And I think I can speak frankly to you.
Well, let's hope you could, Frieda.
He's up to something.
You mean the sort of thing he used to do before he went to prison?
Yes, I'm sure of it. He's carrying 30,000 English pounds in a money belt.
30,000?
Yes.
English pounds?
I counted it when he was bathing yesterday. And, Harry, I wouldn't bother you with this, but I think it has something to do with you.
With me? How could that be?
You're an official of the American government, aren't you?
No, of course not.
Yes, you are. I heard my father talking to that Kurt Mannheim about you. I know it's supposed to be a secret, but I wanted to warn you. My father knows you're with the American government.
Well... Thank you, Frieda. I don't know how he discovered my secret,
he
but...
He discovers everything. He wants something from you. I feel so ashamed. I'm afraid he introduced us because he thought that you might... But you would like me.
Well, if that's so, darling, I must tell you he was right.
Well, how are the young people, huh?
Hello, Haircock.
You both look so serious.
Papa, sit down on it.
Yeah.
I've been telling Harry that you're up to something, well...
Shall we say unsavory, Haircock?
The things one has to bear for one's moral and suspicious children, Mr. Lyme. Frieda will not let me forget the mistakes I made when I was younger. What she says is quite untrue, of course.
Is it? Then why are you carrying 30,000 pounds in your money belt?
You have been searching my clothes, Frieda.
I won't apologize.
No, you will not apologize. You will only condemn.
You haven't explained what you're doing with that much money.
Well, you know the International Refugee Group you are so interested in.
Yes?
The drive opens next week. I was going to try to bring joy to your heart by giving the money to them.
I do not believe you.
I have listened to enough, Peter. You may go to your
room. No, that's the most ridiculous.
Never mind, Harry. I'm a beautiful daughter. I will go, Papa. Goodbye.
She is a beautiful daughter, Mr. Lyme. In some ways.
You brought her up in the old-fashioned way, I suppose.
Exactly.
And since I intend to marry her, I suppose I must let you know it before I let her know it. Seems silly, doesn't it?
She would never marry without my say that she could.
I'm asking your permission, then.
Mr. Lyme, do you know Bill Foster, the United Nations man staying here at the hotel?
Yeah.
I am anxious to meet him.
Well, that ought to be quite easy.
I am anxious also to be recommended to
you. Plain spoken, Haircock. I know that Bill Foster has in his possession the UN plans for the industrialization of Western Europe. You want to bribe him, isn't that it?
But you have to put it that way, Mr. Lima.
I'm one of those efficient Americans you hear about, Herr Krupp. I like to save time.
Very well, I wish to bribe him. Now, about my daughter, Frieda. It's too bad that she would never marry unless her papa said she might.
And now you're bribing me.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Lyman. Of course, I would want her to marry some person who was friendly.
Oh, okay. You don't have to spell it out, Herr Krupp.
Take your time, Mr. Lyman.
I love your daughter very much. I want very much to marry her.
So?
Well, I'll get in touch with Bill Foster for you. £30,000, and if I had any regret at all, it was that I wouldn't see Frieda again. Then I've always found in such cases it's other girls. Wherever you go, you find other girls to take the place of the girls you don't dare to get in touch with again. The world is full of wonderful things, including the money that men like Krupp are willing to pay for a few phony papers. So I brought Krupp to Bill Foster's room that afternoon.
It's a great pleasure, Mr. Foster. I've been wanting to meet you for a long time.
Then we can get right down to business. Harry tells me your errand isn't philanthropic.
Harry wouldn't tell you anything if he wants for a rag and a bone and a hank of air.
He likes my daughter, Mr. Foster.
Yes, he told me about that. Now, I understand you want access to the UN plans for the industrialization of Western Europe.
A blunt man, I like that.
I can let you have them for 48 hours. For a price.
Aircraft has money.
Oh, yeah.
How much?
Shall we say £10,000?
You can make millions with these plans.
$15,000.
Herr Krupp, you know how distasteful this is to me. I myself wouldn't touch a penny of your money. I have no respect for either one of you, but in the context of this crooked business, I find myself unhappily associated with you, and I cannot permit one of you to cheat the other.
Oh, don't worry, Harry, old boy. I wouldn't take him up on an offer of $15,000. I'd want 20 at least.
I would need that price.
$20,000. $30,000.
He said 20. Isn't that good enough?
Oh, $20,000
is
good enough, all right, but you're carrying $30,000. That's
even better. If you're carrying
that much, that's the amount I want. Disgusting. I hope you know, Mr. Lyme, you've just cost me £10,000.
Well, why don't you look at it this way, Krupp? You haven't so much lost $10,000 as you have gained a son.
All right. I shall want to take the pleasure of my export examiners on the flight to any money at all.
Is that so? I shall want the money before I let those plans out of my possession.
Isn't Mr. Lyme's word good enough for you?
Mr. Lyme is not guaranteed that you will return the plans to me if you got them without paying for them.
Now tell me, Mr. Lyme.
Well, I can't tell him what I don't know, old man. You're not particularly honest, aircraft. You might take the plans. After all, you might copy them and return them to Foster, if you return them at all. Without payment.
Yes.
It would be like you. It would even be good business, I suppose.
But I must have my expert examiner. I must know what I am buying.
Krupp's point of view is reasonable, too, Foster, you know.
Well, he won't get the bank till I get the money.
Wait a minute. We both want this deal to go through. There must be a... Yes. We are both convinced of Mr. Lyme's honesty, are we not?
I am.
And I.
Thank you very much.
You give me the plans, and I give the money to Mr. Lyme to hold until my next examiner...
No, I was willing to bring you two together, but I don't want to have anything to do with the money.
It seems like a reasonable proposition to me, Harry.
The money is tainted.
Nobody is asking you to keep the money.
Well, I should hope not.
Oh, we just want you to hold it.
Well, I don't like the idea.
That's unreasonable, Harry. You're in it this far.
Yes, I'm in it this far. Goodness knows.
Here is the money. Take it.
It was a great pleasure to stand there looking unhappy and reluctant and to have that great pig of a crop force the money on me. Well, I finally allowed his entreaties to prevail and stuffed the £30,000 into my pockets. Foster then produced the completely spurious plans and blueprints and Krupp took them and left. Now we had to act fast. Foster gathered up his luggage. He was all packed, of course, and we went immediately to my room where my luggage awaited us. There was always the danger that Krupp might see us in the lobby, so we took the time to arrange two envelopes, one with the money in it and one containing strips of newspapers. The envelopes looked alike, so if by chance we should find it necessary to return the money to Krupp, we could switch the envelopes on him. Now we were ready to go. But at that moment, there was a knock at the door.
What's that?
I don't know. I knew what answered.
Harry!
Oh, come in, Frieda. This is Mr. Foster. I was just about to bring him to the station, Frieda.
Harry, and Mr. Foster, here are the plans my father got from you.
I don't get this.
I heard my father talking to some of his men on the telephone, telling them to get right over and examine these plans. I knew he couldn't have come by them, honestly, so I took them.
Well, Foster, you'll be late for your train. You'd better go. I won't be able to help you now.
Well, all right.
Here, don't forget this bag.
Oh, no, of course, you know where I'm staying.
Oh, yes, I know.
All right, toodaloo. And thanks for the plans, miss. We won't prosecute your father.
Now, Harry, what about the money my father gave you to hold?
Oh. So you know about that, too?
Yes.
Frieda, I swear it was for love of you. I never wanted to get mixed up in this.
I know all that. Papa chuckled over that with Kurt Mannheim. I heard him. I listen all the time. Now, what about the money?
The money, yes. You know, I think we ought to teach your father a lesson and not return this money to him.
I'm glad you feel that way, because that was my thought, too.
Oh, it is? It was?
Yes. We'll use that money as he pretended he was going to use it. We'll give it to the refugee group. Harry, don't you think that's a wonderful idea?
Yes. It's perfectly wonderful. She was looking at me and she had her hand out, and I knew I had to give her the money. But the preparations I'd made to fool her father would be equally useful with her, I was sure. I took out the envelope containing the money. I handed it to her. I had her count it and put it back in the envelope and seal it. Then I spoke casually about a picture on my wall. When she looked toward it, I did the old switcheroo with the envelopes. Both envelopes were now in my bureau, but the one with the money in it was under a magazine. I strolled casually into the bathroom, combed my hair. When I came back, she picked up the envelope that was lying in plain sight, and we left for the offices of the refugee organization.
This will teach Papa exactly the kind of lesson he needs.
I was afraid that she would allow the officials of the refugee group to open the envelope in our presence. But she was just as willing as I was simply to leave it and go outside. So, everything is okay. And now to get rid of her.
Are you going back to the hotel, Harry?
No, I'll have to leave you. I'll see you tonight, Frieda.
All right. But, Harry, one moment. Kiss me.
It's a pleasure. I kissed her. It was a pleasure. I was kissing her goodbye, so it was a lingering kiss. Then it seemed she wanted to borrow my pen and some paper. She wrote something.
Here, take this. Don't look at it unless you do not see me tonight. Do not ask me what I mean. If you do not see me tonight, read this. Otherwise...
I took it. We parted. When I was able, I went back to the hotel, checked out, caught a night train. I was well on my way that I thought again of a note. I took it out and, rather expecting to be amused, started to read it. But as I read, I grew more and more horrified. In my mind's ear, I could hear her voice reciting every syllable of that note.
Harry, darling, I love you. But I have been the daughter of a criminal. I cannot be the wife of another criminal. Yes, I know that you are that. I even knew that you switched envelopes on me. When you went into the washroom, I switched them back. Don't feel too sad about losing the money. The refugees need it. Love. Frieda.
Harry Lime will be back in just a moment.
Frieda. The very thought sends a shudder down my spine. So long now.